Not all women are made of sugar and spice. Some are made of poison. A mother wants to cash in on her son.
You know, it was a horrible, horrible situation.
A bookkeeper steals her way to murder.
It was brazen, it was careless, it was inexplicable.
And a rich teen indulges her temper.
See, that looks lovely.
Yeah, but it's not the one I wanted.
She had money, beauty. She had it all.
These deadly women take lives without blinking. They have no mercy. August 2008. Russellville, Alabama, is small town, heartland America. Home to the Scott family.
On top.
Christy dotes on her youngest son.
The blue.
4-year-old Noah. 6-year-old Mason is more of a challenge.
No.
He had some appearances or some attributes of autism. He was on some sort of medication, and he was a lively child.
It's Noah's game.
Hey, what's going on? He just wants to play.
His father, Jeremy, has the patience to deal with Mason. Christy doesn't.
Her tolerance toward Mason and the way he reacted to things was totally different than how she treated Noah.
It's been that way since the day Mason was born.
We had several witnesses that had noticed how angry, how quick to anger she was with Mason versus how patient she was with Noah.
I can't cope with you. Play by yourself.
We started learning that she, I guess, disciplined Mason more than she did Noah.
I think Christy saw Mason as an object that was giving her a headache.
Christy's attitude to Mason is an open secret. The mom even fights with him in the schoolyard.
She and Mason Scott got into a huge argument. It was so bad, and the appearance of it looked so bad.
Don't you dare!
Christy actually pushed Mason away from her. And school officials actually had to come and intervene.
Hey, stop that!
I'll take him.
And had to basically separate them and walk Mason into school themselves, and she walked back to the car very angry.
Other mothers might give a child like Mason special attention, but Christy just gets angry. In the early hours of August 15th, 2008, Christy runs to her neighbors for help.
She arrived at the door of her neighbor's home.
Call 911, my house is on fire!
And so, of course, they pick up the phone, call the 911. The husband starts to see if there's anything he can do.
Emergency, house fire.
Christy and Noah are safe. Husband Jeremy is out of town. But where is Mason?
Where's your other boy?
He's inside.
What?
It wasn't until over 2.5 minutes later that the neighbor called back to 911 and said, she just told me that her son is in the fire.
As a parent, I can't comprehend how that wouldn't be the first thing that would be said is my kid's in a fire in the house and it's on fire.
So for 2.5 minutes, they were reacting like it was a house fire versus a child is burning alive and you've got to run down there and try to save it.
That length of time in a burning house is forever.
Emergency services are quick to the scene.
I think everybody involved, you know, was doing all they could do to try to, you know, get the child out, but there was no way.
Little Mason's body is found next to his bed.
Mason died of smoke inhalation and burns, and, you know, it was a horrible, horrible situation.
The close-knit community rallies around the family. But at her son's funeral, Christy is acting strangely.
What a beautiful baby.
This lady said that she had her daughter there and Christy was holding her little daughter. She said, Christy said the most unusual thing. Christy said, Noah has always wanted a little sister. Now maybe he can have one.
You hungry?
What do you think about having another child? I mean, Noah always wanted a little sister.
And Jeremy thought that was the wrong place and time to even be talking about that.
Who actually says that? Who has ever said that when their child was burned up in a fire a day or two before?
As well as planning her new family. Christy is expecting a financial windfall.
It's classic psychopath behavior to not be able to wait for something. I want it and I want it now.
In 2008, while the tiny community of Russellville, Alabama, mourns 6-year-old Mason Scott. Investigators searching his fire-ravaged bedroom find something alarming.
This isn't supposed to be here. And what he had found was a smoke detector that was just laying on the floor.
The smoke detector is still working. It should have saved Mason's life.
You could have wiped it off with a rag and probably put it back on the wall and it looked brand new.
It looks like someone has disarmed it.
The smoke detector was determined to have been pulled off the wall. I knew somebody had killed Mason Scott.
Fire investigators, experienced ones, can smell an arson the way a shark smells a meal.
This is now a murder case. Investigators dig deeper and discover fire and Christy go hand in hand.
She did have a lot of fires in her background.
There was numerous fires reported at the father's house, at the grandmother's house, and even at previous residences of Christy and Jeremy's.
The vast majority of people go their entire life without ever suffering any fires. Christy had a lust for it.
3 years earlier, Christy's home catches fire twice in the same week. Arson is never proven, but where there's smoke,
two fires in the same home, just a few days apart, in my former line of work, we call that a clue.
I think it's the best policy.
As an insurance broker, Christy makes sure she has protection. And the day before Mason is killed, she tells her father to boost that protection.
I was thinking about taking another application policy on the kids.
But you got more than enough cover for them and the house.
She originally had a $75,000 insurance policy on Mason. And within 12 hours of the actual fire, she had went and upped it $100,000, which made it
$175,000. $100,000 life insurance policy on a six-year-old the day before he dies is about as subtle as a brick upside the head.
You can never have too much.
Police piece together what really happens on that hot August night.
I bought your favorite dessert.
Christy's husband is away. She serves Mason his last supper.
There we go.
His favorite dessert.
Is that yummy?
They say sometimes that a parent, before they kill or murder a child, will give them some one of their favorite things or favorite items.
And then she tucks him in.
Are you ready?
Ready, Mama.
With an extra large dose of cough syrup.
It was double the amount that would be normally given a child of that age.
Christy keeps her favorite son, Noah, out of harm's way.
Good night, honey.
In her bed. Then she ignites her wicked plan.
Somebody had taken that smoke detector off the wall to prevent an individual or a person from being alerted or woke up. And the only adult in that home was Christy.
The thing that I guess that upsets me the most is just the fact that she could actually do that to a child, and then the fact that it was her child.
Fire death has got to be one of the most awful, painful ways. You know, she must have really, really not cared or hated her child to allow him to die in a fire.
Christy Scott denies everything.
I never have been more sure about somebody being guilty than I have on that trial.
In June 2009, the jury agrees. Christy is convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death by lethal injection. She remains on death row.
Fire did a lot for Christy. When she'd burn a house down, she got a new house. When she burned down her last house, she also got rid of a big problem, Mason.
Christy Scott showed no mercy for her firstborn child. Just an unquenchable desire to eradicate him and boost her bank balance.
It would take an incredibly heartless person to burn their child to death. I don't think Christy gave a whit for Mason.
A young woman with a bright future.
She was diligent, she was hardworking.
Takes the wrong path.
She had larceny in her heart, and there's no pill for that.
And walks it all the way to the bank.
She was consumed with greed for money and was prepared to go to almost any extent to get it.
January 1999, in Sydney, Australia. 21-year-old, accounts clerk Sneeza Suteski, starts the new year with a new job at the local car dealership.
Sneeza Suteski was the daughter of immigrant parents to Australia. She presented very well. She had a nice manner about her.
Can you save it on a disc?
She was diligent. She was hardworking.
Yeah, my course was all computer-based.
Great.
But appearances can be deceiving.
So how come you left the courier company?
I needed a change.
I can relate to that.
Sneeza has a dark secret. She'll do anything to hide.
Hi, I just need you to sign this invoice.
Sure.
6 months earlier, she worked for a courier company in the city.
So are you enjoying the job?
I am. Yeah, I'm finding it rewarding.
Good.
Sneeza's rewards are more than her pay packet. She is defrauding the company. Not nickels and dimes, but cold, hard cash.
She had defrauded them of something like $100,000. What she'd done is she'd manipulated invoices that had been coming into the firm.
Sneeza thinks she's hit the jackpot.
Yes! Yes!
She decides to invest the money at her local casino.
How much did you win?
$3,000!
Drinks on me.
Yeah. Oi! Yes. Over here!
She is known to spend $10,000 a day.
Sneeza's greed trumped her good judgment, if she ever had any.
For Sneeza, it's easy come, easy go. Until her superiors sniff out her daylight robbery, to her father's horror. A career-ending crime that could end in hard time.
Sneeza, how could you?
She was informed that her fraud had been detected and that the police would be involved.
I'm afraid we have no other option. We have to call the police.
Incredibly, she gets a last-minute reprieve.
I have money, and I can pay you back.
I'll have to speak to my supervisors.
Thank you.
The company strikes a deal with Sneeza's father.
You don't understand this. Why, Sneeza?
I promise I won't do it again. I'm so sorry.
Her parents went and mortgaged their home to get the $100,000 to pay off this company.
Management have agreed.
So their daughter wouldn't be reported to the police.
Sneeza steals 100 grand without punishment. It's all gain and no pain.
I'm sure that her parents had the best of motives, thinking surely she will learn her lesson from this.
Psychopaths tend to not learn from their mistakes, and Sneeza didn't either.
She has a taste for fast money, and she's hungry for more.
Within months, she was at it again.
Sneeza soon gains the trust of her new boss at the car dealership.
You working back?
Yeah, I'm gonna get through these invoices.
Good for you.
51-year-old accountant, Richard Peach.
He lived on his own. He'd worked for a long, long time as the finance manager. He was the sort of person that everyone liked.
Richard has no idea Sneeza's just been fired for fraud. She even has a reference from the company that she stole from.
It didn't speak about her in glowing terms, but it didn't disclose the fact that she had been responsible for $100,000 fraud.
When the coast is clear, she dons her apron of deceit and goes to work cooking the books.
What Sneeza would do was change the details of the company that the money was going to be paid to so that it still had the name of that company, but a different account number and branch number.
Sneeza inserts her bank details on the invoices, secretly siphoning the cash into her own account.
Nobody at the company suspected her of anything. Nobody would have looked at her and thought that she was engaged in massive fraud.
Sneeza could have made a good living and progressed well as an accountant, but stealing was much more fun.
In just 6 months, Sneeza plunders $180,000. Most of it ends up lost at the casino. She is slipping into addiction.
Sneeza was desperate for money and desperate to get away with the theft.
The stakes couldn't be higher. Sneeza is gambling with her freedom, and the odds are stacked against her.
It was a brazen act of fraud that eventually was going to be detected.
December 1999, Sydney, Australia.
This is the second time I've called, and I'm still waiting.
21-year-old Sneeza Suteski.
Well, it can take up to a month to receive the payment.
Steals $180,000 from her employer.
I'll look into it and get back to you.
Now she's in danger of getting caught.
Hi, it's an excite to see you today.
If Sneeza had stolen smaller amounts of money over a longer period of time...
I've got to go through the invoices. It's probably just a banking error.
She might have gotten away with it, but her greed compelled her to do more and more and more, and it became noticed.
The boss is getting complaints that bill's not being paid.
Oh, really? Well, is there anything I can do?
That's probably better if I look after it.
Sure.
She knew there was only a little bit of time left before her fraud would be detected by Richard Peach, and she'd be in trouble again.
Sneeza's parents have saved her from the consequences of her thieving ways in the past. This time, she needs another solution. She decides to have her boss, Richard Peach, attacked and beaten.
Found anything?
Not yet.
So he is off work for 2 weeks.
Bye.
See ya.
During those 2 weeks, she would engage in a massive amount of fraud. And then, just before he was due to come back, she'd resign. That was the plan.
Sneeza goes looking for hired help to do her dirty work.
75 minutes late, where are they?
Relax.
A lot of women, when they want someone dead, don't want to do it themselves. So they hire someone.
You're sure we can trust them?
He's my boyfriend, and he wants the money.
And that's what Sneeza did.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Sneeza's friend has connections in the drug underworld.
Sneeza?
She's introduced to a 19-year-old heroin addict.
Would you like a drink?
No, I'm good.
There was one meeting that they had where there was a particularly important conversation where they were discussing exactly what would be done to Richard Peach.
So when does this need to happen?
It has to happen before Christmas.
What she said was bash him, stab him, kill him. I don't give a F.
I don't know, as long as he doesn't show up for work.
What she was really doing there was giving the hitman a blank check.
What?
You do whatever you think is necessary. I don't really care.
December 20th, 1999. Richard is out for drinks with a friend. He has no idea it will be his last.
Snezza was very much hands-on. She went into the club whilst the hitman waited in the car park. Snezza rings the hitman on his mobile phone to give him the warning that Richard Peach is about to come out.
Hey. Yep, he's on his way out.
Got it.
As he comes out of the club into the car park, there's a woman with him. There's also a security guard in the vicinity.
There are too many witnesses. Sneeze's hitman is forced to improvise.
So he drives furiously to Richard Peach's home because he thinks I'll have a second opportunity here outside his home to attack him.
Richard is walking to his home like he's done 1,000 times before. He's utterly unprepared for this.
The hitman comes up behind him, hits him on the back of the head with a hammer, thinking that he will lose consciousness.
But Richard is stronger than he looks. He doesn't drop.
The hitman is so surprised, he pulls a knife out of his pocket.
Stop!
Stabs Richard Peach in the chest, severed his aorta, and Richard Peach died within several minutes from blood loss.
Richard bleeds out on the cold, dark concrete.
I don't know if Sneeza was motivated 100% by greed or she was desperate. But in the end, she killed.
Sneeza shows no remorse. She is callous to the core.
The fact that Richard Peach had died didn't dissuade her from continuing with her original plan of this massive fraud over the next 2 weeks.
She steals another $100,000. This final act of greed will be her last.
The murder of Richard Peach ensured that the full focus of attention of the police was on this company and why Richard Peach was attacked and killed.
The breakthrough comes with a hitman. Days before the murder, he was seen casing the victim's neighborhood. Police pull him in. And he talks.
The hitman was prepared to give evidence in court against her, and he did.
A month after the death of Richard Peach, Sneeza is arrested and charged with one count of murder and 9 counts of fraud. She pleads guilty to the fraud, but not to the murder. She argues she ordered a beating, not a dead body. But the law disagrees.
The jury found that she was responsible for his death, and they convicted her of murder.
Sneeza is sentenced to 24 years in prison. The stolen money is never recovered. Did she stash it? Or is it lost at the casino?
We may not know where the stolen money is, but fortunately, we do know where Sneeza is. an 8x10 cell.
A spoiled rich kid.
She'd sleep all day, and then she'd go out at night and party.
You have to take me!
Who won't take no
now.
For an answer.
She was starting to exude behavior that was violent.
I hate it here!
Turns teen rebellion into tragedy.
She had it all, and she threw it away in one moment.
Hollywood, 2001. The playground of the rich and famous, and those who want to be. One of the wannabes is 17-year-old Katrina Sarkisian.
She had a half-sister, Sabrina. She lived with her in a very exclusive Brentwood neighborhood in west side of L.A.
Their wealthy mom, Angelique, wants the best money can buy for her daughters.
See, that looks lovely.
Yeah, but it's not the one I wanted.
Darling, it was too expensive.
Yeah, but I want that one.
Angelique is reported to have just overindulged her children to the point where they had multiple mopeds, go-karts, motorcycles, just to get to the Starbucks to get a mocha.
Okay, we'll go back to the store tomorrow.
Katrina's life would be the envy of most teenagers.
This was exactly what Katrina did not need. Katrina needed structure and rules.
At home and at school, Katrina is like a runaway train.
She was a fairly normal kid up until middle school. And that's when trouble started to appear.
The little rich girl starts to run right off the rails.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
I can smell what you're doing.
Then why did you ask that?
My office now.
Katrina develops a passion for drugs and alcohol and a burning hatred for anyone who gets in her way.
She was starting to exude behavior that was violent, aggressive toward fellow students, making threats to them.
Okay, if you just give her another chance.
Mom!
No amount of money can curb her wild behavior.
By the time Katrina started really acting out badly, it was too late for her parents to control her.
I hate it here!
Just a minute, Katrina.
No, I'm not coming back!
You look at it and you say, oh, there's a person who really needed somebody to help.
But Katrina's not listening. She just wants her freedom.
She eventually dropped out of high school at 16.
Now, Katrina answers to no one. She won't even get up in the morning.
Katrina.
Her mother described her as nocturnal. She'd sleep all day, and then she'd go out at night and party.
Her mother tries everything to help her daughter.
Katrina was on antidepressants for what her mother described as a sleep disorder.
I don't think Katrina had a sleep disorder. Katrina had a, I want to go out to a club every night disorder.
Tonight, Katrina gets out on the wrong side of bed.
I need a lift.
Well, I can't take you. I've got friends coming.
She wants to go partying, but Mom won't drive her.
How am I supposed to get there?
I don't know.
You have to take me. Katrina, now.
Katrina had assaulted Angelique multiple times in the home.
Okay.
Hitting a parent is a line that should never be crossed. Katrina did it.
Across town, another teenage girl is also preparing for a night out. 15-year-old Deanna Moran is smart and sensible.
So, who's having the party tonight?
Just a friend.
She was an all-star volleyball player. She played in water polo. She was in the track. She was on the honor roll.
What friend?
Kay, friend of a friend.
Deanna's been invited to a party in West LA. The all-star student can hold her own in a crowd.
I gotta go, Mom.
She was always the one standing up and defending her friends or anybody who was being bullied.
Two strangers. Tonight, their paths will converge.
It's a high school party, no parents at home, lots of drinking. What could possibly go wrong?
November 17th, 2001. It's Saturday night, and in West Los Angeles, a party's getting started. A teenager's parents are out of town.
You have a backyard party with 15-year-olds and there's alcohol and maybe narcotics and mom and dad aren't there. That's going to be a setup for a problem.
It's not long until 15-year-old Deanna Moran has a run-in with Sabrina Sarkisian.
Deanna noticed that Sabrina is breaking some potted plants.
Chill. Someone's house.
She confronted her, said, you know, stop breaking other people's property.
What are you gonna do about it? I'm going to tell you to behave.
You can see how she would stand up for somebody else's property. From what everybody says, it's kind of the person she was.
Deanna stands up to the wrong girl. The athlete can win this fight, but has no idea what she's getting herself into.
I'm going to tell my sister about you.
Sabrina went over to the corner of the yard and called her older sister. Said, come over here. We gotta deal with this girl.
She pushed me down at this party I'm at.
You should watch out. My sister's crazy.
That sister is Katrina. High school dropout, drug abuser, and troublemaker. Katrina races to the party to defend her sister's honor.
Just from the behavior that we had seen, you can imagine how angry she would get.
Who pushed my sister?
Deanna has always stood up for what's right, and she won't back down.
It was me.
And Deanna, like Deanna does, daring Deanna, said it was me. You got a problem with that?
But this is no simple cat fight.
It was just a quick punch, and all of a sudden Deanna's laying on the ground, and she was kind of gasping for air a little bit.
Deanna, what's wrong?
Her clothes were sticky. And they realized,
she's bleeding. She's bleeding.
Deanna has been stabbed once through the heart. Katrina Sarkisian made sure she had the upper hand in this battle.
It was a knife whose purpose was to be hidden in someone's hand. Why did she have that?
I don't know what else Katrina would be doing with a knife showing up at a party other than to do harm.
I don't think there's anything Deanna could have said to Katrina to stop what was going to happen. Katrina wanted to kill someone.
The sisters are gone before anyone has time to react. The terrified teens don't call 911. They decide to take Deanna to the hospital themselves.
Somebody pulled up in a car and they said, well, let's just take her to the hospital.
We've got to get her to a hospital.
Which turns into be, when you think about it, quite a fatal mistake.
Without professional help, Deanna dies when she reaches the hospital. With dozens of witnesses, the police come straight to Katrina's door.
Katrina gets picked up by two detectives with the LAPD at about 2:00 in the afternoon.
So when was the last time you saw Deanna?
Her speech started to slur and she was acting not normal.
I'm sleepy.
Katrina isn't just evading the questions. She's committing suicide.
She stopped breathing. We need an ambulance.
You can only imagine that this person sitting at home, being traumatized from whatever occurred at that party in her mind, being so tormented that she's going to down a whole bottle of pills and then go to the police station.
She's taken 43 antidepressants that morning. Half that number is lethal. Just like her victim, Deanna, no one can help Katrina.
Within not even a 24-hour span, two sets of parents have lost their daughters. And it's just unspeakable. I think in both households, what was happening?
What started out as a teenage cat fight ended up with two girls dead.
How am I supposed to get there?
Katrina Sarkisian couldn't be tamed.
Now!
Not by parents.
My office now!
School.
Who pushed my sister?
Or a stranger at a party.
It was me.
She was an explosion waiting to happen.
I think Katrina had some sort of rage within her that needed to be dealt with. If it wasn't Deanna, it would have been somebody else. It would have been some other tragedy.
She possessed everything you could wish for, except mercy.
Katrina had money, beauty. She had it all, and she threw it away in one moment.
These deadly women were cold, calculating, and selfish. Christy Scott burned her son alive for an insurance payout. Sneeza Suteski stole much more than money. And Katrina Sarkisian's temper took a teenager's life. All three cared only about themselves. They showed no mercy.